Good morning. Today is Friday. Yes, it is. The 16th of March is close to the St. Patrick's Day as we're going to get during the weekdays. Joining us this morning, our Cato City Manager, Karen Diemer, who's nodding in agreement about something. I don't know what, but you know, we'll let her disclose what she's agreeing with me about so that rumors don't run rampant.
That's right. Good morning. No, just agreeing that tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, good. So pretty tame agreement.
Pretty easy one to agree on. We're one for one this morning, though.
Yeah, well, it's probably going to come to a fork in the road here pretty darn quick. obviously, the thing that has happened since last we got together has nothing to do with budget or anything.
Oh,
boy, is she looking like a little pixie-esque right now. Gee, I wonder what.
Maybe a little bit to do with budget, but
Yeah, just a tiny little bit. City Council voting to remove the statue of McKinley, and I suppose that's almost been a passing of the torch, so to speak, from one elected to the next, was to have that discussion.
That's true. We've had the discussion many times, many decades.
50, 60 years, something along those lines.
Yeah.
For those that weren't privy to the initial, where did this latest round of discussion come from?
The discussion came forward a little bit before the November election and then gained, I'd say, some momentum right after the election with several requests for the council to bring an agenda item to talk about it. At that point, the council set a special study session to just talk about the McKinley statue. We had that in December. And then we had, you know, as they had a series of a lot of small meetings with groups of people. Then we had a study session on just the plaza as a whole. And there was a section of in that particular session on the McKinley statue and the historic plaque that was also on the plaza. and then at that meeting, we had agreed at a time that the council would come back and have a discussion amongst the council. They were study sessions. The council wasn't going to render an action that night. There was a lot of information that was forwarded to the council. If people are interested in the history, if you go to that meeting, which was on February 21st, there's a huge packet in that agenda of all of the comments that came in, both, you know, in favor of keeping the statue and in favor of removing the statue that were considered. And then they took, of course, public testimony that night, and then they rendered a decision 4-1 to remove the statue. Subsequent to that, at the next meeting, which was the first meeting here in March on the 7th, Councilmember Susan Ornelas brought forward an idea to try to figure out a way for the community to vote or have a more of a thorough vetting or voting process on where the location of the McKinley statue would be moved to. In the initial list, she had also added an option, which was stay in the center of the plaza. In part, I think she did that because the removal of the statue will have to go through what we call an environmental review process. It's under what we call CEQA in the California law. And it sounds confusing because what about a statue would be considered environmental review, right? I mean, that's the most common
question. Where are the birds going to go?
Right. Is there an endangered species living around McKinley?
Yeah.
But no, that's not what it is. The definition of environment in that portion of the law also includes historic resources. So in the city's general plan, the cities all have general plans. It's sort of the blueprint of development and how your city operates. In the city's general plan is a section on the plaza, and it specifically lists the statue and contextually its location in the center of the plaza as being a significant historic feature of the plaza. So, and then that document adopted by the council brings what we'll call sort of a presumption of significance to that historic resource. The state environmental law, protects significant historic resources. Our document lists this as a significant historic resource, so we need to go through an environmental review process to consider the moving of that statue.
Now, the state typically has no qualms in weighing in on all kinds of local issues. Is that the case with something like this, or is this more of a local, but just needs to be reported back to the state.
Yeah, the statue piece really is more local. It will be reviewed by the State Historic Preservation Office. So part of also that CEQA environmental review is a referral process. We'll refer out to the tribes, to the natural resource agencies, typically, because it might be a stream bed alteration or something that we would all think of more as an environmental impact. So in this case, we're working with the State Historic Preservation Office because we are also part of the council's action at the February meeting was to change some of the language on a plaque that simply designates the Jacoby Storehouse as a historic structure. So we're working with them on just the changing of that language.
Now, the city has the ability to change language on private property? Signage?
Well, the plaque itself sits on the plaza.
Or is this the one
sits
that's on the
city side. It's on the rock, yeah. But it does designate, actually, the Jacoby Storehouse. So the owners of the Jacoby Storehouse are working with the city and a group of people on language. We've asked for what are called the TIPOs, the Tribal Historic Preservation Officers, to look at that final language to replace that. And so that's a pretty straightforward
process. Who owns the building
process.
Now?
It's owned by Bill Chino, Chris Smith, and I believe they might have a third partner.
Okay, and that's who purchased it from the family?
Yeah.
Yep. No need to stir that one up a little bit more, huh?
No, I think, they've come forward. They've said, we want to help in this process. They're helping to fund the replacement plaque. The city has taken down the plaque. They're going to store the old plaque. I mean, it does, in essence, belong to them.
Although so it's not going to disappear,
then?
It was
on city property, yeah.
Maybe put inside the building somewhere.
Yeah.
A feature.
Right. So we'll talk about the next public meeting coming up after our break.
We'll throw in the time check. Let's go, girl. I mean, if you're going to do it, let's do it all the way. KINS News and Information Time is 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with co-host Karen Deemer. We'll get that time check in there for you. With the history of the process that's occurred, as we alluded to with the topic of the McKinley statue, that there was a pound and a half of information that was made available. In putting that together, and I presume you had at least quick blow through on it, if not
yes.
Detailed, what were some of the things that struck you with previous city council decisions to keep the McKinley statue in place, or the history of the statue, or of the president himself?
Yeah. I think the history of the context of bringing the statue to Arcata is interesting in and of itself. I mean, there's quite a story to the statue. So there was a man who lived in Arcata by the name of George Zedner, and he had actually seen McKinley speak kind of in the San Jose area shortly before President McKinley's assassination. And after the assassination, I think there was a sense in the nation, of mourning and coming together around a president and at that time his accomplishments. And it was really then that George Zedner set out to say, I'm going to find a way to honor the president. And he ended up connecting with an artist in the San Francisco area, Haig Patagan. And they discussed and he negotiated for $15,000, which is a lot of money back in 1905-ish. It's, it was installed in 1906. And so this artist who went on to really become a very famous bronze sculptor, but this was probably the artist's first real significant piece. right after the artist completed it, the San Francisco fires hit. and construction workers nearby the artist's studio ended up pulling that statue out into the street and just nearly, you know, missing, but saving that statue. And then shortly thereafter, it made its way on a boat and came to Arcata via boat. It was originally, so this is kind of interesting, people, because we've talked a lot about, you know, is it so much the statue or is it the fact that the statue's in the center of Arcata in terms of is it the appropriate thing for the center of the town? Has been a lot of discussion of this council, has been a lot of discussion of past councils. Some information that came forward in this round was that there was a design committee of Arcata residents that worked on just the plaza, and they had designed a space, which we can't figure out exactly where it was, but designed a space for the statue that was not in the center. And when the artist arrived, the artist said, no, I designed this for the center. It needs to go in the center, and it needs to be at a certain height. So he had designed it in a, you know, in proportion to the height and the location of where the statue was going to go. Literally within a couple of days, they took down what was a gazebo in the center of the plaza and a bandstand in the center of the plaza to erect the statue. So, of course, we probably would have not today been able to do that so quickly, but they did that. And that's really how the statue got to the center of the plaza.
So there is no general idea where the fathers at that point had thought to put the statue?
On the plaza, but we're not sure if it was in a corner or on the side. We haven't located that. So a few of us are still looking, but we haven't located what that plaza design committee had in mind for where the plaza, where
so
it was.
So if that location is determined, is that where it goes?
Well, that's a great question. So
at the proper height.
Right. So the whole, I think, impetus behind Councilmember Ornelas's proposal, which the council will be reviewing this coming Wednesday, the 21st. That meeting's at 6 o'clock. We're actually moving that meeting to the Arcata Community Center at Martin Luther King Drive. So near the health sport and the sports fields, that community center, because we expect a large crowd. Our last meeting on this item, we had really standing room only and a lot of people that stood for several hours. So we're hoping to move to a venue where everybody can, you know, be seated.
In comfortable folding chairs.
Yeah. Well, at least they're cushioned. We'll have cushioned ones
more
there.
People standing, but they'll be sitting and then standing.
Yeah. Holding their backs and knees. So they will be discussing, I think, this concept of, is there a way that we can have a voting process that allows the community to give input as to the ultimate location of the statue when it moves?
Was the sense from those that were in attendance before or from the electeds just to get rid of, melt it down, eliminate, cut it up? Or is it recognized even at the least level?
Mm-hmm.
A tremendous work of art.
Right. And that's a good question. I will say there was some level of discussion about the types of things of melting it down or reusing the bronze for something else, but I would say very minimal. The bulk of that discussion really was that there is a historic context to it. There are proper locations for it. And so part of, you know, if the council really chooses to go this route to try to determine a way for the residents to vote, We can't probably work through county elections. The templates for their ballots don't work in a way that would allow us to, on a ballot initiative, to have anything other than a yes-no vote. So,
really, you couldn't have, like, the candidates where there's options?
You would think it would be, but the way, I mean, I understand that the voting system is complicated, and to list options of locations on what would be considered a candidate template could potentially really skew sort of how their voting system works for November.
So why don't you run them for office? Or have an office and then you have, yeah, okay, fine. Thought about that one, but it's not going to fly, is it?
But we're looking for ideas. So this is the time for the community
to come forward and
suggest practical ideas.
KINS, News and Information Times, 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Karen Diemer, Arcata City Manager. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, by American Ag Credit, REDEC, and Lolita Cheese Company. Karen, considering the challenge with anything that's historical, whether it's the McKinley statue, and I would say the challenges that you're confronting with that, or anything else, mm-hmm. you know, Arcata's got a lot of lumber history.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and there are those who are very aggressively anti-timber industry, who would love to probably wipe the slate clean if they could. You've got some of the old mill sites, mm-hmm. you know, down towards the pond. I'm trying to be nice.
Well, and we have several old mill sites in Arcata.
And you
look at the historic photos.
To allow somebody to try to bring one of those things back as a historical, and maybe that's where part of the timber history is, mm-hmm. or museums mm-hmm. are, and things of that nature. It may not have been allowed if it was today, but there's a lot of things today that wouldn't have really made it back then either. So you got kind of that back and forth discussion going on. When discussion moves into an emotional arena, how do you maintain decorum? Other than gavel.
Yeah, no, that's a challenge. It's a challenge. There is, I think, a lot of sort of angst in the community right now. There's a lot of energy towards trying to make change in the community. I mean, we're seeing it nationwide, and as the motto says, you know, think globally but act locally. So people are coming out and trying to figure out what can they change in their community to be reflective of the change that they'd like to see in the nation or the world.
Sure.
So our meetings, you know, we've had several that have had very passionate or very spirited discussion. And I've watched, you know, our last two mayors really try to thoughtfully communicate with the community that we want our meetings to be a safe place for all viewpoints to come forward. And in part, it's why we're moving this meeting to the community center this next week, is to make sure we've got enough space for people to move about around each other, to not have, our last meeting was sort of shoulder to shoulder. And if you had the predominant crowd at that meeting was very interested in the removal of the statue, and we heard from several people that didn't feel comfortable in that meeting coming forward to speak about, you know, retaining the statue in its current location. And in part, I think that could have been because of just the physical confinement of our space, of being able to move your way to the podium without, you know, literally having to kind of weave through people. So I'm hoping that if we have a more open floor plan, where you can more clearly identify if you really have a particular person that's being disruptive to the meeting. And, you know, our current mayor is really trying to model behavior that she would like to see in the meetings. And she's made a statement at her last meeting, and I assume she'll be making a statement at this upcoming meeting about sort of the decorum that is expected at a city council meeting. They are very structured meetings. And in part, it's why our council has a lot of study sessions that can be less formal, that people can talk for maybe more than the allotted 1, 2, or 3 minutes, that there can be questions answered back and forth, which also doesn't happen in sort of the normal structure of a meeting. But we really do ask people to, we're small communities. We're going to overlap with these people and agree probably on 90% of all the issues together. So when we get to these 10% of issues that we have really divergent views, is to be able to share those in a safe space and then let the council do their job as representative of our local community and making their decisions. But they definitely need to be able to hear all sides of the issue to make the best decisions.
I've heard secondhand and experienced it a little bit personally too, in those meetings where the public discussion happens, people being followed out of the building.
Yeah.
Or in, you know, confrontations in the parking lot,
right.
Verbal confrontation. Right. Things like that make it less likely to have a feeling of comfort, particularly if you're in a minority position or one that is arguing logic in the face of emotion, in the swirl of the hurricane of emotion, and you try to present something that isn't emotional, and though it just gets run over. So there's certainly an art to running a public meeting to keep things down. Is that something that they teach in elected school?
They do. They teach it to the best they can. But I think what you learn if you've experienced a lot of public meetings is that there just really is a million different perspectives that are going to be shared. And it takes, I think, time for people to really understand how safe it is to have an open mind to hear those and not be afraid that, you know, all of a sudden everything that they say has been negated by the next speaker. Because the council is very thoughtful. I often see them taking down little notes of what people say, and they really do try to listen to each comment.
Well, and you're not trying to persuade the crowd.
Right.
You got five. So the influence of Erin Dunn with her comment on Tuesday was talking about, I guess it's the equivalent of peer pressure, that, you know, if everybody's clapping or commenting about a perspective that isn't yours, do you step up?
Right.
Are you willing to take the hit?
Yeah.
Not from those that you're trying to get the message to, but as soon as you turn around, there they all are.
Yeah.
You know, ready to attack either verbally or...
Well, even if they don't. I mean, even just the process of everybody claps for this speaker, but nobody claps for the next speaker, and your comments are, you know, more akin with that speaker that got nobody clapping. You know, it does. It becomes intimidating. So, I mean, after many speakers, we had clapping at the last meeting, and the mayor many times said, all right, I really need you to curb the clapping so that everybody can feel safe sharing their viewpoints here and then trying to move on.
By that point, the damage is already done, and those who are... in that minority perspective have been cowered down, a lot of them. I mean, there's some of us that, you know, we don't see the road signs.
Right. So we agree again, we're two for two today, and we challenge the North Coast community to bring decorum, civility, and compassion to all of our public meetings.
Me and my PR director will be back. It's 8:42.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Fly Humboldt remind you that flying local is buying local and supports local jobs and investment. Fly Humboldt is a community-based coalition of businesses, organizations, and citizens dedicated to getting more flights to more destinations. We know that reliable and affordable air service is a critical part of a healthy community. For more information, visit flyhumboldt.org or find us on Facebook.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:47. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Karen Diemer. Karen, during the break, we had a little bit of a discussion about a couple of different things. And you mentioned something that really struck a chord with me, and it's something I wrestle with all the time. You know, I'm on the Eureka City, or the Eureka Chamber of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's supposed to be for Eureka businesses. Our physical location,
mm-hmm.
We're in the county.
Right.
And I asked three different times, do I qualify? Because, I'm a resident.
Right.
Okay, but I'm not a Eureka business. Well, their membership is more than just the city limits. When you have discussions about things like McKinley or parks or whatever going on.
Businesses.
That's Arcata specific. Other than experts or consultants that you may be bringing in for discussion in a public forum, should anybody who's not a resident of the city of Arcata be permitted to participate? I mean, if I come in from Eureka-ish, as a citizen of Eureka, and comment on Trinidad, I may be a frequent flyer and spend a lot of time, but that's not my town. Same with Fortuna, same with Crescent City, same with Medford, same with anywhere else.
Yeah.
Is there a recognition that an Arcata citizen, that this is for Arcata citizens, or is this a community discussion or a countywide discussion or a state or blah, 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 blah?
Sure. I think all of those can be true. I think we're a small region, and I think all of the local elected governing bodies benefit from input from the entire region. You know, we have a lot of people locally that go to meetings from, you know, let's say Trinidad down to Ferndale. You know, that being said, I think that a big impetus behind Councilmember Ornelas's vision of coming up with a way to allow the voters of Arcata to proxy a vote somehow that at least educates the council on what the voters of Arcata prefer.
Like just a simple advisory vote?
They'd all be advisory votes. So whether it's something we can do through the elections office or something that we do as a mail-in ballot like they often do for special districts, or we come up with something more creative but focused on sort of registered voters. That is, in essence, I think getting to the core of we really do want to know what current Arcata residents believe about this important decision that has been discussed multiple times and has now come back before us.
Is that fellow's family, the one who commissioned?
Mm-hmm.
Is there lineage that are still local?
Not that I've met. So one more call out to the community, any of the Zender family that would certainly welcome a phone call and any other history that they can provide.
Would that influence anyone? Does the family have more input because they bought it?
They haven't had input at this point. So, and it was a donation to the city, as all of our pieces of art throughout the city are.
Oh, sure. Pull out the old donation card. See everybody on Monday.